This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton is an award-winning author, cartographer, historian. He's online at rickbritton.com, and he joins us each week as we explore the top 25 most significant Civil War battles that took place in Virginia. And Rick, I believe... Today we're going to talk about the Battle of Cold Harbor.
That's right.
But before we do that, you start teaching your History of Virginia class next week, right?
That's right. We've got a class over at the Senior Center, Virginia History 101, and it starts Thursday, October 7th, and we still have a few seats in the class. So if you're interested, call the great folks down at the Senior Center Travel Office at 974-6538. But what we're doing is it's a class specifically for folks interested in the early history of Virginia, and what we're trying to do is hit a lot of the big topics. So Native Americans, of course, tobacco, the first cash crop, slavery, the termination of the American Revolution, pretty much. Of course, it went on for another couple of years, but the last major campaign was right here in Virginia, the Yorktown Campaign, George Washington's presidency, and of course, the architecture of the Jeffersonian period. And in those two, what we're doing really is we're talking about how dominating Virginia was in the early years of the Republic, how dominating it was in the White House, in architecture, across the board. You know, four out of the first five presidents were from the state of Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Something in the water then. I wish it was still in the water now. So when was the Battle of Cold Harbor?
So Cold Harbor, what we're going to talk about specifically today is the action that took place on June 3rd, 1864. But the armies were really in this position facing each other from the 31st of May until the 12th of June. And it's mainly because this is another instance where the Confederates, pretty heavily outnumbered, dug in as soon as they got to this position. But let's, this one doesn't follow immediately behind the last time that we talked about Grant and Meade facing off against Robert E. Lee. So let's connect the dots a little bit. The last major one that we talked about between Grant and Lee was Spotsylvania Courthouse. So in between Spotsylvania Courthouse and Cold Harbor, there was another battle that was pretty good size. It's the North Anna Battle, and also goes by a lot of other names. And perhaps if I had 26 on the list, perhaps North Anna would be on the list, but I didn't think it was that important since we were trying to keep the numbers down to 25. So
yeah.
Basically what was happening is in Grant's overland campaign, he continually shifted after a battle, and the Wilderness you could call a Confederate victory. Spotsylvania you could also call a Confederate victory. He decided to shift to the left and try to get around Robert E. Lee's right, and in the process of doing that, of course, turned Robert E. Lee's flank. But, of course, if he could steal a march on Lee, get in between Lee and the Confederate capital at Richmond. So North Anna was fought along the that river. And if you think about the topography of the state of Virginia, there are a number of rivers as you go from north and south. And each one of them, of course, is a natural barrier to invasion, so a natural defense line. So once North Anna was taken from Robert E. Lee, then he had to fall back again. Now, he fell back to this position, and Grant was shifting. That's the reason Robert E. Lee fell back. Grant shifted to his left again, trying to get at Richmond. So this position is just northeast of Richmond, just across the Chickahominy from the Confederate capital at Richmond. And it's really...
Cold Harbor is.
Yeah, Cold Harbor is. And it's really just a hop, skip, and a jump from another battle on our list. Number six, Gaines's Mill. In fact, Gaines's Mill is immediately behind the Confederate lines at Cold Harbor. So
Been fought the same week or the same month 2 years before.
That's right.
And just to remind people, we're talking with Rick Britton. Just to remind people, this you refer to Grant's overland campaign.
Right.
This begins with the Wilderness, right?
In the
spring of 1864.
Right.
When he's taking the Army of Northern Virginia and pushing them steadily through Virginia overland to try to get to Richmond.
That's right.
Yeah.
And eventually ends up with the Siege of Petersburg.
And
that's
not,
the end of the overland campaign.
Right. So eventually the overland campaign is successful. We're watching the beginning of the end here for the Confederacy.
It is absolutely successful, and Robert E. Lee knew that once this started, and if he ultimately ended up in a permanent siege situation, defending Petersburg and Richmond by siege. You know, we always say the Siege of Petersburg, but really it was the Siege of Petersburg and Richmond, their defensive lines around Richmond too. Lee knew that that would be it, because he wouldn't be able to leave those positions. Those two cities, once he was backed up against them, are not things that he could give up and still win. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he knew that once he got into a siege situation,
it was over.
That was going to be it, and it was just a matter of time. So he's trying to buy that time. He's trying to stop Grant from getting that close to where he can put himself in a regular siege kind of situation where there's no more room. There's no more room to maneuver once you get backed up to Petersburg and Richmond.
What was the key, you think, to the success of this overland campaign, which has many names: Wilderness, Spotsylvania Courthouse,
North Anna,
Cold Harbor, that we'll talk about here in a second.
Right.
What's Grant's keys to success? Finally, after years of these Union troops trying to get to Richmond, and we've been talking about this for weeks. They tried through Fredericksburg.
Right.
They tried coming up the peninsula.
Right.
They never could get there.
Right.
But Grant's going to get there. We're gonna watch this happen.
Right.
What was
the key to his success?
We
talked about this last week off the air, is that we're about to see the end of Confederate victory here real soon, and a whole slate then of Union victories, one right after another.
The dominoes just started to fall.
In the opposite direction, right. And the key, really, we've talked about this before. I can't stress this enough. The key is that Grant was the man who knew how to do it. Some of the other men might have known how to do it, but he also had the stomach to do it. He had the guts and the determination to do what had to be done to put an end to this.
Did something change among the Union forces in 1864, because they're a lot of the same guys, right? And did something change with them? Were they ready stomach the fight?
No, that's a really good question, Coy. And I would have to say that the answer is no. That the answer is, the big difference is Grant. Because
the leadership they had.
Because once Grant is here, he has to fight them, the other leaders of the Army of the Potomac, a lot of them, he has to fight them to teach them how it has to be done.
That the tactics that they had been using the past 2-3 years weren't working.
Right. You can't just go up here, lose an attack, and then go, oh, we have to retire behind the Rappahannock. You're going to get anywhere that way. It's not going to keep going that way. You're going to lose that way. And, of course, the additional pressure that they've got now in 1864 is, guess what? It's a presidential election year.
Hello.
And the big supporter.
Welcome to America.
The big supporter back there in Washington, D.C. is the president. And
he needs a victory.
And Ulysses S. Grant is Abe Lincoln's guy. So, if they start losing, all of a sudden, guess what? Abe Lincoln might lose.
Did Grant at this time, we want to get to Cold Harbor, but did Grant, while he's in the field, was there any indication, and I haven't read his memoirs, I know they're fantastic, I've heard, but
not only are they fantastic, but get this, because they are written by a former president of the United States, they happen to cover the Civil War mostly, but it's also his presidency, they are considered the best written presidential memoirs by any president.
Was there any
That's
indication,
how good this guy was.
Was there any indication while he's still in the field that he was interested in politics? That he's out there fighting the war, thinking,
because everything else other than the Civil War, he was a miserable failure at. In fact, there's this old saw that's really fascinating. Remember, we got to get to Cold Harbor. But there's this interesting saw, this old one, that when you think about it, it's like everybody who was successful before the war was a failure in the Civil War. And everybody who was a failure before the Civil War became successful in the Civil War. So it works with a lot of guys when you think about it. McClellan, huge success before the Civil War. Big failure in the Civil War. Fremont, huge success. He was the pathfinder of the West. John Charles Fremont, big, big failure in the Civil War anyway. But that's aside them from the point.
We're talking with Rick Britton online at rickbritton.com. We're going to take a 90-second break, and when we get back, take us to Cold Harbor in the summer of 1864. Let's rejoin our conversation with Rick Britton. He's online at rickbritton.com. So June of 1864, the next chapter in Grant's effort to finally get Union troops down through Virginia to Richmond.
Right.
And they get very close at a place called Cold Harbor.
That's right. But remember, we talked about Grant trying to get to Richmond, but really Grant's goal at this point, of course, this will get him Richmond, but the goal is to destroy Robert E. Lee's army. That's the real goal, and he understands that. And that's what he's been teaching these guys. Forget about Richmond right now. Yeah, this will get us Richmond by destroying Robert E. Lee's army. And if we have to do it by attrition, if we have to fight him day after day after day and wear him down by attrition, we can replace our losses. He can't replace his losses. And that's what worked. That's it. That's the plain and simple story.
Why right couldn't there. Lee replace his losses?
Well, it's because they're numerically outnumbered. I mean, you know, there were 32 million Americans. Only 10, 11 million Americans were in the South. 3 million of those were enslaved African Americans. So that's 22, 24 million versus 8 or 9 million. They're outnumbered numerically. So if you have to wear them down, you can do it by attrition. And eventually, they won't have anybody left. There'll be nobody standing. Yeah, so that's how you do it. So that's what happened here at Cold Harbor, only it's another Confederate victory. So the Confederates dug in along this line in late May to try to stop Grant from getting at Richmond. Their right is anchored on the Chickahominy, just northeast of Richmond, and the line goes up to the northwest, about 6 miles. Now, the fighting took place all along this line, this dug-in line, and when I say dug-in, these are some of the most improved, most perfected Confederate breastworks that were ever used to this date. So even more improved, even more perfected than the ones that we talked about at the Mule Shoe. You know, every few hundred yards, emplaced artillery. Abatis out front, those are obstacles created out of felled trees and felled bushes with the sharpened branches and the points facing toward the enemy. If they have the rope or the twine, those things tied together. So you have to stop to get at the men behind the breastworks. You have to stop and cut your way through with axes. And of course, while you're doing that, you're just being torn to pieces by the rifle fire from these breastworks. So the assault that we're going to talk about right now is the most famous one, and this is the one that took place on June 3rd. Grant had this idea that the way to break it was an all-out assault conducted by three of the Federal Corps, a corps under Hancock, a corps under Wright, and the corps under Smith. And so he ordered this attack, and it took place early in the morning. It started, anyway, early in the morning of June 3rd. And the way this story has been told in the past, we need to amend it a little bit. I think the folks out there that are familiar with this attack know what happened. The initial assault lasted, maybe half an hour, 45 minutes at most. And inside of the first 15 minutes or so of that assault, about 7,000 Union soldiers were killed or wounded in 15 minutes.
Trying to break through that stuff.
Right. And as close as any of them got, there was a minor breakthrough by the division under Barlow, and he held on to it briefly. Then there was a counterattack, and he was driven back. But aside from that part of the line where there was a breakthrough by the Federal forces, the closest anybody got to the Confederate breastworks was about 50 yards, and most of them never even got that far. Part of the problem was the Confederate lines that were being assaulted were concave. So what that meant was that each of those three Federal Corps, as they were going into a concave position, they were getting fire from three sides, especially that corps in the middle. So they were completely destroyed inside of a few minutes and stopped. And there are plenty of stories. People have heard the anecdotes. Confederate soldiers, because it was so brutal and so horrible, Confederate soldiers begging their officers to let them stop firing because it was murder. It wasn't even warfare anymore. It was beyond warfare. It was murder. It was slaughter. Then what happened was the men, the Federals, got pinned down. Now they're stuck 50, 100 yards away from the Confederate line. Nobody can stand up to move. And all they're doing is they're making breastworks out of the bodies of their fellow Union soldiers and trying to hide behind that. So it was very similar to what happened in front of the stone wall at the Battle of Fredericksburg, where impossible to take that position.
Why would Grant order a frontal assault on this
it's
position?
It's part of his mentality. It's hammering ahead. Just do it. We've got the numerical advantage in this battle along these lines. He had about 109,000 men available to him. Lee had about 59,000. So that's pretty close to 2-1. So he's got the numerical advantage. If you go at them everywhere, perhaps someplace they'll break.
But it never broke.
This is the idea. It broke briefly in one spot. Barlow's division broke, but very briefly broke through the Confederate lines. Reinforcements arrived and drove them back out. Most everybody else got pinned. And so now they're stuck out there. They try to send some reinforcements. The reinforcements get shot up. They actually send orders for the men to rise up and renew this assault. And to give you an idea of how everybody understood how ridiculous this was, all that happened when they got that order at the front was the men opened fire from laying down.
Yeah,
nobody was willing to stand up in front of those Confederate breastworks. Nobody. It was suicide to stand up. So they're stuck out there for the entire day, and the fighting goes on. Not as brutal as it was during the initial attack, of course. Then when the sun goes down, they're able to retire, and they're able to get back out of rifle range. And to top it off, the loss was so horrific, was so terrible to the Union side, that it took Grant a number of days to ask for a flag of truce to retrieve the wounded and the bodies, which meant that, unfortunately, a lot of the Federal soldiers who were wounded got left out there by their comrades. Why wouldn't Grant ask for a flag of truce? That's an admission of defeat.
And he didn't want to do that.
So it took him a number of days.
So there are wounded guys who died out there.
There are wounded guys
who eventually died
of starvation. Not starvation, but when you're bleeding, of course, you
dehydration.
You dehydrate and you just bleed out and die. So yeah, literally hundreds more died because they were left out there between the lines.
So this is the Battle of Cold Harbor, June 3rd, 1864, known to history as being one of the most really brutal battles of the war, certainly that took place in Virginia.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the reason it was so brutal is because of those breastworks, where one man behind the breastworks was worth 2, 3, 4, 5 attackers, depending on the situation. So they're amazingly improved breastworks. It just shows you. And this is an early example of what we saw in World War One, in that trench warfare in World War One, where it was just insanity to try to assault a well-manned trench line. So that's what we're seeing here. And of course, we'll see it a little bit later at Petersburg.
And the significance of this, of course, is this is one of the last Confederate victories in Virginia, right?
It's one of the last Confederate victories on a battlefield like this. We're going to talk about one other one that takes place during the siege of Petersburg, but they were already in a siege situation. This, even though they're behind breastworks, both sides are not behind breastworks. The Federals are out in the open field. So it was the last Confederate victory of that kind, here in Virginia.
Now, before we break here, we're talking with Rick Britton. He joins us every week to talk a little Civil War history. We're exploring the 25 most significant battles of the Civil War that took place in Virginia. Our past conversations are podcast at WINA.com. Next week, we're going to look at the Battle of Trevilian Station,
right,
which took place only about a week later after Cold Harbor.
That's right. And it's during that same campaign, in the Overland campaign, but this is a cavalry battle, and it's in Louisa County. It's not that far away from here, just outside of the town of Louisa.
And why did that make your list?
My list because it's one of the largest. It's actually the largest all cavalry battle in the American Civil War. Brandy Station is the next one. Brandy Station is more famous. Brandy Station had some infantry involved, so it's not an all-cavalry battle. So Trevilian is actually the largest meeting fight of all cavalry in the American Civil War.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Rick, thank you so much.
Yeah,
it
man.
It really is. It's fascinating stuff. Rick Britton, he's online at rickbritton.com, award-winning author, historian, cartographer, and we'll look forward to talking to him again next week.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.